Greetings once again, America, from right here in the middle of it all. My name's Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news. Stand by now for the Worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, and once again, I am with you. I am your humble host, Doug McBurney, coming to you from right here in the middle of the country, in the middle of it all. And it's so good to have you back with us this week on the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. We take a look at the week that was. We look ahead to the week that shall be, keeping in perspective always the eternal. And thanks for being with us this week. It should be a pretty good run this week, I must say. Had some interesting things happen this week, both locally and nationally. So, I want to start, though. Where do I want to start? I want to start in Delaware. For some reason, I'm not sure why, but perhaps you'll understand when I read this story to you. This is from CBS Television. Out of Philadelphia, the dateline is Newark, Delaware. It happened last Sunday at about 7:45 p.m. on Scottsfield Drive in Newark, Delaware. Police say three boys, ranging in age from 7 to 8, were riding their bikes in the park when a 14-year-old teenager threatened young Zach Montero and forced him into a port-a-john. A port-a-john, I said. Yeah, the 14-year-old then pushed over the toilet onto its door, preventing the young lad from escaping. This is a 7- or 8-year-old lad. Preventing the young lad from escaping, the boy's two friends were able to get him out. The boy, however, was covered in waste. Yeah, a disturbing story. Now, in an interview with the father of young Zach, he's the young lad who was covered with waste, they interviewed his father, and he said, quote, "As a dad, immediately I got very furious, and all the thoughts of what I wanted to do about the situation, all the thoughts that went through my head were illegal. So naturally, I didn't do that." That's an unquote, according to Dave Montero, young Zach's dad. So what's happening here? The 14-year-old, the punk who tipped over the porta-potty, he's charged with unlawful imprisonment, assault, and harassment. And let's see, he's been released on $4,000 bail and ordered by the court to have no contact with the young 7-year-old victim. Yeah. So how many years could he end up doing here? Well, who knows? He could end up in and out of the justice system for the rest of his life based on this one event. Charged with unlawful imprisonment, assault, harassment. He's got a court order against him. Well, you know, the father of young Zach, he probably just wanted to grab this 14-year-old and give him a good whipping. And of course, that's illegal, so he said he didn't do that. But what do you think would be better for this 14-year-old perpetrator? For young 7-year-old Zach's dad to be allowed to give him a good whipping? That way, dad gets it out of his system. And the 14-year-old punk realizes that he's a punk. And, nobody goes to jail, nobody pays any fines, nobody has court orders against them, and everybody moves on. And hopefully the 14-year-old gets a good lesson as the flesh on his backside heals, because I know I would whip this kid within an inch of his life. And also, as I was reading this story, I couldn't help but think of myself when I was 7 or 8 years old. And also thinking of myself when I was 14 and thinking, realizing that, yes, I would have been the one in the porta potty. I would have been the one covered with waste. Yeah, that would have been me. I know. I just know it. When I was about 6 years old, no, I couldn't have been six. Probably I was 4 years old, right before I started school. I had some neighbors, And all I can remember, it's all very hazy, but I can remember that they were teenagers. And the one thing my mom and dad had always told me was, be careful of teenagers. They're bad. But I always wanted to hang out with teenagers because they were big and they seemed really cool. And one day, the teenagers who lived 2-3 houses up the street, they were being nice to me. And they invited me into their barn. I lived in a very rural part of southwestern New York. And they invited me into the barn in the back. And for the first time in my life, they were being nice to me. And they asked me if I wanted to eat some of the candy that they gave to their bunny rabbits. And they actually invited me into the bunny rabbit barn and let me eat the candy that they gave to the bunny rabbits. And it turned out that the candy was not candy. You know, it was little round balls, and it looked like candy to me. I was only 4 or 5 years old. But it wasn't candy. Now, I'm not going to elaborate on exactly what it was because, well, the whole situation is frankly embarrassing. But rest assured, I would have ended up the one in the porta potty. But anyway, I'm all for just letting the dad give the punk a whipping. In fact, if it were my 14-year-old son, I would invite the 7-year-old son's father over, and I would supervise the whipping myself. I would watch the neighbor give my little 14-year-old punk kid a whipping. And then I would probably give him a whipping myself on top of that whipping. But I guess I'm old school. All right. Now, let's move on into the important news of the week. I want to start with Columbus Day. Now, I know Columbus Week was last week, although how would you ever know? Does anyone celebrate Columbus Day anymore? Anyway, Columbus Day. Well, let's start with the story from Time Magazine. It's all about how Columbus Day has fallen in popularity. And Time quotes a New York Times editorial from back in 1913. By the way, for you younger people in the audience, Christopher Columbus was one of the first Europeans to discover America and was without a doubt the European through which European culture was funneled into the New World. There's simply no doubt about that. We don't know if he was the first guy or the 15th guy, but he's the guy who really got the ball rolling on what we call the New World and European culture coming over here, bringing over Christianity and all that. And yes, I know various diseases, but we'll talk about that. Anyway, the New York Times talks about, Time Magazine talks about Columbus Day, and they quote a Times editorial from 1913 when there was a political debate over whether or not to institute a new national holiday. And one of the politicians objecting, he wrote of Columbus Day, he said, quote, "Its occurrence," that is Columbus Day's occurrence, the holiday occurrence, "interferes sadly with the conduct of business in a season which should be the busiest," unquote. Now, there's the difference between politicians back then. And now, anyway, Time Magazine goes on to say, "Now, critics of the holiday are less concerned about work and more concerned about history. European arrival precipitated a shocking decimation of much of the New World's earlier inhabitants, and some U.S. towns have opted not to celebrate Columbus Day and instead commemorate Indigenous Peoples Day." Yeah. All right. Well, now I'm all with the politician who said that we don't need another national holiday. We've got too many already. How are we ever going to get any work done, for crying out loud? But so I would have probably voted against Columbus Day, or at least the establishment of a holiday, just based on that. But these days, it's not about that. So these days, various local officials are upset about Columbus Day, but they dislike Columbus Day for the wrong reasons. Because I think that an acknowledgement of Christopher Columbus and the blessing of European culture moving to the New World helps us to understand that the New World was in fact a gift from God to the children of European Christians. That's right. If you read stories about the first Christians who came here and settled the New World, things didn't go very well for them. It was very difficult. Many of them died. But their children we're allowed to enjoy the blessings of the new world. And I think it's good for us to remember that this gift that was kept hidden from civilization was given to the children of loyal, fervent, hardworking Christians. And we should thank God for this gift. But Columbus Day has fallen out of favor. We, as you may have guessed or noticed, I do some volunteer work on behalf of Personhood USA, Personhood Colorado, seeking to reestablish the personhood of all people, especially unborn children, seeking to reestablish their personhood by law through the peaceful means of the ballot box. And last Monday, Columbus Day, I found myself heading up to the Columbus Day Parade to hand out literature. And it just so happened that I had my pickup truck decorated with banners and stickers and a big pop-up display because of some other activities we'd taken part in earlier in the morning. We got to the Columbus Day Parade, and I said, well, how come we don't have a float in the parade? And Leslie Hanks, co-sponsor of Colorado's Personhood Amendment, she said, well, Doug, you know, the organizers of the parade this year, they said they didn't want any controversy. You know, it's been very controversial, what with the Native Americans and the Latinos, and I think the homosexuals and quite possibly the transgendered have all staged protests of the Columbus Day Parade, and they just didn't want any controversy. I said, well, that's sad. I said, and look, my truck's all decorated. And she chuckled, and I chuckled, and we kind of looked at each other, and I said, Leslie, I'm just going to go do my thing. And I went and got in my truck, and I drove around. I got in line with all the floats. And I, when the guy asked me, what number are you? I looked at the truck in front of me. It said number 24. I said, well, I'm number 25. He said, oh, great, perfect. And he went on. He was trying to get everyone in line for the parade. And anyway, the parade launched, and I'm psyched. I'm like, here I am. I'm going to be able to drive this basically a billboard for personhood down the streets of downtown Denver for the Columbus Day Parade to thousands, tens of thousands, who knows? Well, it was sad because the streets of Denver were like a ghost town. There were several stretches where the police in their riot gear outnumbered the spectators, just a few spectators. Even the protesters, when you went by the Capitol, even the protest was pretty weak. So anyway, I guess what I'm trying to say is Columbus Day has been successfully killed, at least in Denver. And I think it's sad. I don't think we need a national holiday. Don't get me wrong, we don't need another day off work. But we do need to remember the gifts of God, and we need to honor God and thank Him for the gifts that He's given us. And losing Columbus Day is just losing another link in that chain that connects us to the remembrance of the gifts of God, our Father, the Creator of everything, the Judge of all the earth. Can I get an amen? All right. Now, let's move on into more news. From the Culture File, this is from the Daily Mail. You all probably have been following the story of the Chilean miners who were brought up from the depths of the earth alive after 69 days. 33 men, 69 days. It's quite the story, and I've got to tell you, I was pretty thrilled. I was actually on the phone with a prospect, as I'm always looking for work, and she said they had it on live there at their workplace, and she said the first miners just come up. Can you believe it? And I said, isn't it amazing? Isn't it amazing when there is human life on the line? I said, do you remember back when they first found these fellas? They said that they would probably be stuck under there until Christmas. And here we are just past Columbus Day. And the first miner's coming up. Isn't that amazing? And she said, it is great. What's Columbus Day? Anyway, I want to read from the Daily Mail. Yoni Barrios is... Well, he was known as the group's doctor when all the Chilean miners were stuck there underground, Yoni Barrios. But he became better known for another problem. Apparently, his wife and another woman, his mistress, were holding a vigil for him at the camp that sprung up there up top the mine. Marta Salinas, whom Yoni Barrios married 28 years ago, reportedly almost got into a fight with Susana Valenzuela, a 50-year-old, as they both stood vigil there in the camp area. After he emerged, Yoni did, his wife, who has three sons from another relationship, not with him, she said she's over him. She said, I'm over Yoni. I don't feel anything in particular. I don't care about him anymore. According to reports, there's another fellow down there, Carlos Barrios. He has a 5-year-old son with a woman he has not divorced, and his girlfriend of 7 months is pregnant. Another minor is said to have 4 women claiming his affections, a wife he has not divorced, a current live-in girlfriend, a third woman who claims to have had his son, and another who says she is having an affair with him. One that want to own me, 2 that want to stone me, and 1 says she's a friend of mine. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. And we do hope for an opportunity at rebirth, not only for the miners who came up out of the mine, but, well, for all of Western civilization, despite our moles, like all of the sexual immorality and the lack of respect for marriage that goes on, well, apparently not only here and in Hollywood, but, I mean, even out in the sticks of Chile. It seems that marriage just ain't what it used to be. But we hope for the best for all those miners. And, you know, a lot of them claim to have found religion down there. And I guess we'll have to see how it all turns out. But it should be interesting. I suppose I'll be watching. I suppose I can't help it. All right. Now, on to some serious news. And I am serious. This is from my Fox New York, Fox TV in New York. Daniel Dighton, a 35-year-old man, this is from the Justice File, stabbed his father, Barry, 4 times and his mother, Elizabeth, 20 times when they came home from a shopping trip in September of last year. The accused murderer, Daniel Dighton, 35, was frustrated with his parents' attempts to help him get a job and move out of the family home, which was in a suburban English town. His father, Barry, was a school principal. His mother was an administrator at the same school. The couple tried repeatedly to help their son have a career and leave their home. An argument started when his parents came home from their shopping trip to find their, here's the quote, to find their layabout of a son in bed and hungover. They argued with him about his laziness, and he stabbed them to death. The young man denies the murder but admitted manslaughter on the grounds of diminished responsibility. So this, I just wanted to read this story for all of you atheists and agnostics and just haters of God and the Bible who love to quote the part in the Bible about a drunken and rebellious son who should be stoned to death. And you all like to say that the Bible advocates stoning children. Well, this is who the Bible advocates inflicting the death penalty on. It is a young fellow like this. It's not talking about stoning a 14-year-old who tips over a porta potty. anyway, all right. Let's go on now. Cambridge, Massachusetts. From the Culture File, from the Boston Herald, beginning next year, Cambridge Public Schools will close for 1 Muslim holiday each year. The school will either choose Eid al-Fitr, hold on, let me try that again. Eid al-Fitr or Eid al-Adha. Those are 2 different holidays, in case you I mean, me personally, I think Eid al-Fitr is crazy. I mean, you got to go with Eid al-Adha, I would think, but maybe that's only obvious to me. Cambridge, Massachusetts schools, their governing committee, one of the members, Mark McGovern, who pushed for the Muslim holiday in city schools, said he thinks people need to take a step back from what he called hysteria and stereotypes of all Muslims as terrorists. Here's what the school administrator had to say. Do we have actual tape? Quote, "At a time when I think the Muslim population is being characterized with a broad brush in a negative way, I think it's important for us to say we're not going to do that here. But we are going to get another day off. Praise be to Allah the Beneficent." All right. Well, I don't know. I mean, do the demographics in Boston, in Cambridge, I mean, do they necessitate a Muslim holiday? I mean, that's kind of scary if there's so many Muslims in Cambridge that we need a holiday now. Are there enough Muslims to justify a holiday? I mean, that's just not a good sign for Western civilization in general. But I have a feeling that it's just out-of-control liberals who just want to put a sloppy wet kiss on every Muslim they see to ensure them that they don't think they're terrorists. That's what I think is going on there. But that's just my opinion. All right, on into the justice file. Another story for all of you out there, haters of God, haters of the Bible, who like to classify Christians in the same class as the Taliban and the Shia in Iran. This is from Breitbart's website. An Iranian court has condemned a man convicted of robbing chocolates and cocoa from a pastry shop to have his hand chopped off. Yeah. Judge Mohammad Reza Gyuki sentenced the 21-year-old man to have his hand chopped off, also to 6 months in prison for damaging the shop and another 6 months in jail for disobeying police. According to Breitbart, the Islamic Sharia laws of Iran lay down amputation as a punishment for repeated thefts. Let's see. Last week, Tehran amputated the hand of a man found guilty of two robberies in the northeastern holy city of Mashhad. I never heard of Mashhad. Is it a holy city? Are there any Muslim cities that are not holy? I mean, is Dearborn, Michigan now the 317th holiest site in Islam? What's the deal with everything around these people being holy? All right, but that's beside the point. I've been compared to the Taliban because I'm a Christian who believes that there should be a death penalty for murder, for kidnapping, and for adultery. Did I say adultery? I did. I said adultery. I believe that these are crimes that should be punished by death. And so I've been called the Taliban. But I want to go now. Now, the Taliban and whoever these guys, the Shia Muslims there in Iran, they want to cut people's hands off for stealing. Let's go to the Bible. Warning, 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 Will Robinson, for those of you in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would not tolerate anyone who would ever even dare consider quoting a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. What does God say about what we do to a thief? Let's go to Exodus, the 22nd chapter. God says, "For any kind of trespass, whether it concerns an ox or a donkey or a sheep or clothing, for any kind of lost thing which another claims to be his, the cause of both parties shall come before the judges, and whomever the judges condemn shall pay double to his neighbor." No hands chopped off, no jail sentence, none of that. If you steal something, you get busted, you're going to have to pay back, and you're going to have to pay back double, and if you destroy it, you're going to have to pay back seven times, and there are a number of other considerations, but nowhere is anybody's hand chopped off, and nowhere is anybody put in prison. So I want to thank God for clearing that up for everyone. So those of you who think that I'm a part of the Taliban because I advocate the death penalty for capital crimes and I think thieves should be punished, please just give me an opportunity to present God's side of the story before you lump me in with Osama bin Laden and Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, because we need the same. All right, now, let's move on into the justice file. So we've gone from the ridiculous, chopping off someone's hand because they're a thief, which is outrageous and a crime in and of itself. Let's go from there to the other end of the spectrum, to the completely ridiculous. This is from NBC TV in Philadelphia. A suburban Philadelphia township is considering whether to fine people who don't lock their car doors. Yeah. Commissioners in Upper Moreland Township are debating an ordinance that would require people to lock their car doors when parked in public areas or face a $25 fine. You heard it. You heard it right. The police chief there says that since 2008, three-quarters of the thefts in his area there are from cars left unlocked. And so what's their solution? Well, police would do spot checks on cars, and if your car was found unlocked, you'd first get a warning, and then you'd be fined, and you'd get a citation. That's the solution for these poor, hapless police officers. I mean, the student council is going to tell the police, now you're going to have to bust your neighbor for not locking up his car, instead of punishing thieves as they should be punished. And if you punish thieves as they should be punished, well, there wouldn't be a need to even lock our car doors. We could live like civilized people. We could leave our screen doors open on our house and actually let a breeze come through our house without fear of a home invasion. Well, we're going to keep working on that from here at the Weekly Worldview. We'll be doing all we can. You know, we were talking about personhood this morning at the potluck. We had a potluck. I didn't bring any food. I just ate, and I want to thank all my friends. I was out pamphleteering in the great American tradition. There were a number of large churches here in the metro area who declined our invitation to allow signature gatherers to come in back when we were gathering signatures to put personhood on the ballot. There were a number of large churches who were less than hospitable. And so we've been basically practicing some guerrilla operations, hitting their parking lots during their services while they're all sleeping. We go from car to car and put the literature in. We even handed it to... Today, the church let out right in front of us. We're sneaking through the parking lot, and the church lets out. Here comes a flood of people. So what do me and my friend Patrick do? We stand in the midst of the people and start handing out the pro-personhood literature, vote yes on 62. Handed out hundreds and hundreds of pieces before the elders came and asked us quite nicely to vacate the premises. Now, where was I going with that? So at the potluck, we were talking about, well, if we win on personhood and somehow, by some miraculous means, abortion is eradicated, the legalized killing of innocent people is eradicated from the land, what's next? Can we just go on with our lives and act like normal people finally? And I said, no, I said, there's still the child molesters. And we all agreed that that we're coming for the child molesters next. All right. Now, and by the way, that reminds me of a story. I shouldn't say a story, an incident with my neighbor. Now, I've lived next to my neighbor for more than 3 years, and we've only had passing conversations about religion because when I bring it up, he tends to change the subject. And so we haven't had a lot of interaction regarding life, the universe, and everything. And I came out the other day, and he was mowing my front lawn. And I said, Ted, I said, thanks, man. I said, you know, I was going to do that at some point in the not-too-distant future, and I apologize that you have to mow my lawn. He said, well, he said, I'm having my house appraised, and I just wanted it to look good. And he said, I didn't think you were home. Anyway, we're standing in my front yard in front of the big yes on 62 sign, and I told him, I said, well, I've been busy working on the campaign. I haven't been around much. He said, well, what's the campaign? So I told him that the personhood campaign was about reestablishing the personhood of all people, even unborn children, in the eyes of the law, so that abortion, any harm to these children would be illegal. Killing them would be illegal. He said, well, you know, I'm with you. I said, well, Ted, do you think it's a person? First of all, do you think I'm crazy or do you think it's a person? We're looking at the logo and it has a little fetus in there. I said, is it a person? He said, no, no. He said, I'm with you on that. It's a person. But he said, the only thing I have a problem with is, you know, rape and incest. I said, well, I have a problem with rape and incest, too. I'm against all of that. He said, no, no. He said, I'm just saying that, you know, for rape and incest, it really should be a woman's choice, and we shouldn't interfere with that. And I said, well, Ted, I said, you know what? I can understand how you might come to that thinking, but let me ask you. I said, do you really think you're helping a woman who's already been victimized by coercing her or encouraging her now to kill another person, her baby? Who, I said, would you agree the baby's completely innocent? Well, yeah, I would agree. I said, Ted, have you ever met a woman who was a product of rape? And he looked at me. He said, well, no, I never have. I said, well, I have. I have a friend. Her name's Rebecca. And her mother was raped, and her mother almost had an abortion. And you should meet this lady. She's fantastic. She's a great person. And her mother decided against abortion and decided to have her. And it's great. It's a blessing. And Ted said, you know, Doug, her mother was really dedicated. I mean, that's really going above and beyond, don't you think? And I said, you know, Ted, I would like to see an America where we have a lot more people like Rebecca's mom instead of people who want to take the easy way out and run down to the abortion clinic. View. I apologize for the long delay there, but I had to change my batteries. Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't want the mic to go dead, right? Anyway, that's Chris Cornell. What a singer. My wife and I are hoping that somehow he makes it to heaven. Right now, he's on his way to hell with jet rockets, as they say, as I say. And probably not salvageable. But boy, can he ever belt out a number. Probably one of the greatest screamers in the history of rock music. But that was for my neighbor, Ted, because I'd like to see Ted in heaven. But Ted, like a lot of people, has been brainwashed throughout his life. He's avoided, number one, he's avoided the serious questions of life. And he's bought into the cliches that he's heard his whole life. And it's just sad because Ted's a smart guy. All right, so that's that. Now let's move on into the personhood file briefly here. From Fox TV in New York, a healthy baby boy was born from an embryo frozen for almost 20 years. Now, the infant's mother, a 42-year-old woman, was given the embryo last year. She gave birth to a baby boy in May of this year. News of the birth was reported in the medical journal Fertility and Sterility and comes as British lawmakers extend the period that embryos can be stored for up to 55 years. Now, that struck me as odd. Are they saying there's a limit on how long you can freeze an embryo? Because that I would not understand. I would understand a law saying that you must preserve all human life through all reasonable means. I could understand a law like that. But why would there be a limit that says, hey, after 30 years or whatever, you have to throw these? I don't get that. I don't know. Maybe in the past they thought that the embryos would somehow turn into Frankenstein monsters. But now it turns out after 20 years, that it's just a baby. It's a person, just like you and I. And it's pretty amazing that we're able to freeze those little guys. But I must say that it's difficult to bring them from the frozen state back to animation. It's very difficult. So anyway, I'm not going anywhere with that. Anyway, the previous record for a frozen embryo was 13 years. Wow. That's pretty cool. Pretty cool, as science advances. All right, now let's move into the culture file. Okay. Hold on to your Big Bertha. This is, again, from Fox in Orlando. Lana Lawless. I don't even know if I can do this. Lana Lawless is the 2008 Women's Long Drive Association champion. But there's only one problem. Lana is a Larry. Yeah, Lana is a boy. Apparently, the LPGA has rejected Lawless's application to enter qualifying events for the LPGA Tour because Lawless is legally a female after undergoing a sex change operation, but not really a female. And apparently, the LPGA has some rules. Which we might... Well, they have a rule that you have to have been born a woman. Well, that's nice. Anyway, Lawless is quite upset. I mean, after all, she won the Long Drive Association Championship, and she was wearing a skirt and all of that, and she's like, Larry, is upset that she can't join the tour now, seeing as she can outdrive all those skinny little girls. Anyway, Lawless is quoted as saying, quote, "I have traveled a long road to get where I am now, place where I have always belonged as a strong, proud, capable woman. I am, in all respects, legally and physically, female. The state of California recognized me as such, and the LPGA should not be permitted to come into California and blatantly violate my rights. I just want to have the same opportunity to play professional golf as any other woman." Unquote. I mean, it's just outrageous. You can't have a boy going and having his, all of that done, and then now says he's a girl and he can drive the ball 300 yards. Just outrageous. Anyway, I think that's the only tape of that interview that exists. You heard it right here on the Weekly World View in an exclusive. All right. Now, more news from the culture file. White House, this is from the Politico website. White House senior advisor White House senior advisor Valerie Jarrett, White House senior advisor, has apologized. She's apologized last week for referring to a homosexual teenager who committed suicide as having made a, quote, lifestyle choice. The comments, the shocking comments from Ms. Jarrett, were made to a Washington Post reporter speaking about the parents of a dead homosexual, Valerie Jarrett. Try and say that three times fast. Valerie Jarrett. Okay. She was speaking about the parents of a dead homosexual, and she said these people, the parents, are good people. They were always aware that their son was gay. They embraced him. They loved him. They supported his lifestyle choice, but when he left the home and went to school, he was tortured by his classmates. Well, one fag blogger, Michael Petrelis, has slammed Valerie Jarrett for the reference to a lifestyle choice, and he's accused her of taking talking points from Tony Perkins and the Family Research Council. I mean, who are you, Valerie? We thought you were with us. Jarrett said that she misspoke, yes, when she described sexual identity as a lifestyle choice. Yeah. So Jarrett apparently, reportedly, has offered to have her hand chopped off or have a sex change operation so she can live as a homosexual man. Except there is the problem that she likes girls, and that would complicate things. But Valerie Jarrett has prostrated herself in front of the homosexual powers that be in the media. And, well, she's willing to make amends, is all we're saying here. By the way, those last couple of things, those are unconfirmed reports from unnamed sources that we here at the Weekly Worldview have embedded into the Washington intelligentsia. All right. Now, speaking of intelligentsia, from the New York Post, Carl Palladino. Have you guys heard of this fella? This Carl Palladino? Yeah. He's running for governor there in New York. Well, he got in a little trouble. He told a Brooklyn Hasidic congregation that children should not be brainwashed into thinking that homosexuality is an equally valid and successful option. He said it isn't, unquote. He told approximately 50 worshipers, this is according to the New York Post, at the Kahaladas He told approximately 50 worshipers at the Kahaladas Kashau Synagogue in Williamsburg, New York, that children, he said, quote, children would be much better off and much more successful getting married and raising a family. Shocking. Shocking words from somebody running for the governor of the state of New York. I mean, this just leapt off the page when I read it. Anyway, Palladino's Democratic opponent, Andrew Cuomo, blasted the speech as stunningly homophobic, and apparently Andrew Cuomo has vowed to divorce his wife and marry a man in Times Square if he's elected mayor. Now, that's an unconfirmed report, but we will be following the story. Anything more here from the New York Post? Palladino's harsh words about the gay community were blasted even from members of his own Republican Party. Gregory Angelo, chairman of the Log Cabin Republicans of New York, which is a homosexual Republican group. Boy, it doesn't get much worse than that. He said, quote, I don't want New Yorkers to be brainwashed into thinking that ignorance is an equally valid and successful option. It isn't. That's Log Cabin. No. Anyway, this all happened early last week, so the next day I jumped on the wires, anxious to read Palladino's apology and perhaps hear about his arrangements to marry another man or maybe kiss a man. Or do whatever it takes to get back into the good graces of the homosexual community there in New York. And the next day from CBS2 News there in New York, the headline screamed, Palladino ups the ante, slams Cuomo over gay pride parade. So CBS thinks that Palladino's upping the ante. I thought, wow, maybe Palladino, maybe he's got some stones. He's not going to bow down to these homosexuals. Maybe, I thought. Well, here's the first quote from Carl Palladino upping the ante. He says, first quote, I unequivocally support all gay rights. So he's upping the ante. First of all, let me bow down and say that all of you homosexuals, please walk on me, step on me, kick me, spit on me. I support all of your rights. He says he supports all gay rights, quote, except the right to be married. Yeah, he says, I'm a Catholic and I believe in Catholic values. So here's a confused fellow. He's a Catholic, but he supports all gay rights. He says he will hire gays in his administration. So this is upping the ante? Where's the upping of the ante? He also said he's not homophobic. But he was sharply critical of a decision by Democrat opponent Andrew Cuomo to march in a gay pride parade with his daughters. Why? If you're not homophobic and you're going to hire gays and you support all gay rights, what's your problem with a guy taking his daughters to a homosexual pride parade where they dress in leather and do disgusting things? Oh, I mean, I shouldn't say they're disgusting. It's all good with you, right, Carl? Carlos? Carlo? What's his name? Carl Palladino. He's a schizophrenic, which I guess qualifies him for the governorship of the state of New York. Anyway, Palladino says, have you ever been to a gay pride parade? He said to a reporter. Would you take your children there? I don't think so. Well, Mr. Palladino, I don't understand. Oh, he's obviously schizophrenic. All right, I think I've covered that. How disgusting. Anyway, I thought maybe we had a Republican willing to stand up against the homosexual mafia. But no, he too has capitulated on everything except the parades. And we still haven't gotten to the bottom of what his problem with the parades is. All right. From Breitbart's website once again, Star Wars actress Carrie Fisher admitted last Monday to taking cocaine on the set of The Empire Strikes Back while she was playing the part of Princess Leia. Anyone surprised? No, no one's surprised. Carrie Fisher is now a writer and a comedian, according to Breitbart. A little bit about her childhood. She was born to Debbie Reynolds, who was married to Eddie Fisher, who left her and her mom at the age of two for Elizabeth Taylor. Anyone surprised? No. Why did I do that story? I have no idea. I mean, I guess Carrie Fisher doing coke on the set of The Empire Strikes Back. I just wanted to let you know, if you think it's bad today, this is 30 years ago, folks. So can you imagine the rot? If you lift up the thin gilded veneer of society, can you imagine the amount of rot and filth that's under there? I mean, it's amazing that it all just hasn't collapsed upon itself like a broken calliope, for crying out loud. All right. From the politics file from the Wall Street Journal, Dateline Washington, Chris Miller nearly doubled his $3,500 stock investment in a renewable energy firm back in 2008. Mr. Miller is the top energy policy advisor to Nevada Democrat and Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, who helped pass legislation that benefited the firm that Mr. Miller invested in. Mr. Reid's office was called for a comment, and they have initially defended Mr. Miller's purchase of the shares. Anyone surprised? You know, we have actresses doing coke on movie sets, we have politicians making money on insider deals, and we have their bosses defending them. Again, lift up the veneer. Just take one fingernail and scratch the gilded covering, and the filth and rot underneath will probably make you vomit. All right. Let's see. Okay, let's do this from the culture file. From New York, under a law passed by the New York Student Council last week, new toilets will have to be dual flush, which allow users to choose between a high-pressure flush and a low-pressure flush. Now, you can use your imagination to determine what the high-pressure and low-pressure flush is for. The new law will also regulate plumbing fixtures, shower heads, urinals, faucets, and water fountains. Wow. Apparently, a study... Yes, I know. Apparently, a study by the nonprofit Urban Green Council says changing the fixtures could reduce water usage by 5 to 7 gallons per person per day. They also say that more efficient cooling systems could potentially save 200,000 gallons a year, and changing water fountains would encourage the use of reusable water containers. So you notice all the shoulda, coulda, and wouldas in there from this analysis by this nonprofit Urban Green Council. I think the only solid finding that they came to was that according to the study by the nonprofit Urban Green Council, if all of their plans are instituted, there will be enough money saved to hire them and their family members to study other green issues for decades to come. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Do I want to come back? Do I want to let Stevie roll? Hold on. I better come back because we're running out of time. Although I could just sit here and listen to Stevie all night long, listen to that boy play that guitar. All right. But we got to get back to the news. All right. Now, from the war file, from the Reuters wire, I said, a suspected U.S. drone strike killed 8 militants. Oh, yeah, this is from last week. I didn't even have a chance to get to this. Drone strike killed some German militants. Now, these were German citizens trained by the Muslim terrorists to come back and strike Germany. Two missiles from a suspected CIA pilotless drone struck a mosque in Murali in North Waziristan. And it was full of Germans trained by the Al-Qaeda, I suppose. Anyway, it just reminded me, you know, the Germans, they made their deal with the devil back in World War II. The Germans aligned with the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem to help with that pesky Jewish problem. And they made their deal with the devil, and that strengthened the hand of the Muslims. You know, the Muslims had been pretty much relegated to minor status in the world. You know, they ran a few pathetic third world dustbins, and they were well on their way to perhaps even disappearing. But the Germans made their deal with the devil, strengthening the hand of the Muslims, and now the Muslims got strong. Now, and it just reminded me that the United States, in our wisdom, we made a deal with the Muslim fundamentalist terrorist whack jobs back in the 80s to fight against the Soviet Union. And, well, it hasn't helped our situation either. But thankfully, these German militants were killed by a drone. Pretty cool. An interrelated story from the Real Science File. Dateline Israel from America Online News. Israel unveiled a new small drone that can hover like a helicopter and fly like an airplane. It's called the Panther Unmanned Aerial Vehicle, and it can take off without a runway. It's a tilt rotor technology, a tilt rotor drone. Yeah, the Panther weighs just over 140 pounds and is designed for spying rather than transportation, and it could also carry missiles, and it could also kill people. Anyway, do you remember that movie from the 60s, I think, a movie called The Graduate? When asked, one of the characters asked, how should I invest my money? And the other character said, I have one word for you, Mr. McGuire. Plastics. You remember that movie? Turns out if you would have invested in plastics in 1960, whatever, I don't know, you'd be rich now. So, anyway, for those of you trying to think how to invest, I have one word for you.
Drones.
Drones. Start investing today. All right. One more from the Culture File from Jerusalem. Since real estate collapsed around the globe in 2008, the fastest rising property market on earth is Israel. Yeah. It's because they don't have a lot of land there in Israel. And, of course, the world is not letting them build their apartment buildings and houses. According to this story from the AP, looking at the past 2 years ended in June, the last period for which there is data, Israeli real estate clocks in at number one. The most expensive real estate, I shouldn't say that, the most rapidly increasing price of real estate in the world is right there in Israel. Israeli banks offer nothing like the U.S.-style subprime mortgages. Israel's financial market is not intertwined with the mortgage market. Down payment requirements remain high, often equal to more than 40% of a house's value. Yeah. So, folks, all these settlements you hear about, you hear the Muslims whining about the Israelis wanting to build settlements. Those are houses. Those are apartments. And because the Jews haven't been allowed to build houses and apartments wherever they want to in the country that they over which they have sovereignty, well, the real estate prices are through the roof, and you need like five rich Jewish uncles living in Manhattan to buy you your first apartment in Israel. It's just sad. All right. More from the War File. From the French press agency, French Foreign Minister Bernard Kouchner told the Palestinian newspaper Al Ayam that France preferred a two-state solution to be negotiated with Israel. That's regarding the Palestinians and all of that. France prefers a two-state solution to be negotiated. Do we have a quote here from the Frenchman? Yeah, he says, quote, "We want to be able to soon welcome the state of Palestine to the United Nations. Then we can begin selling them weapons and get back to that pesky Jewish problem we were so close to solving so long." Anyway, I think that last part may not have been a part of the official news conference, but you know what I mean. You know what I mean. All right. Speaking of France, French refinery workers have cut off a fuel pipeline to Paris. Yeah, they cut it off last Friday. They're protesting Nicolas Sarkozy's unpopular pension reform. A nationwide strike is planned for this coming week, a day before the Senate is due to vote on a bill to make people work longer for their pensions. So what happens when you have an entire class of people that are completely dependent on the government, and the government says, very sorry, but we have run out of money. We have run out of crepes. We have run out of croissants. We have no money. Well, apparently they're rioting in France. It's just scary, folks. Now, I want to warn all you young kids out there, don't get all hooked up on government support, because it's probably worse than heroin, for crying out loud. I mean, at least with heroin, you can probably maintain a job. Well, maybe not, okay, but maybe with government assistance, you have no chance. I was talking with a friend of mine who said she was encouraging her daughter's boyfriend to go on disability. I said, why? She said, well, he has epilepsy. He's had a few seizures. I said, well, what do you want to put him on? What do you want to put him on disability for? He'll never get off it. He'll become a bum. And she said, yeah, you're probably right, but he really doesn't have a lot of options. I said, well, any option's got to be better than being a bum on the dole. I mean, he'd be a loser. Hello? Anyway, all right. I don't care about that story. Oh, here we go. This is probably the big story of the week. From the New York Times, the Chinese effectively suspended official military relations earlier this year after President Obama met with the Dalai Lama and after he approved an arms sale to Taiwan. A Chinese fellow, Rear Admiral Yang Yi, who's former head of strategic studies at the Chinese Army's National Defense University, he recently wrote, quote, The United States is engaging in an increasingly tight encirclement of China and constantly challenging China's core interest. Washington will inevitably pay a costly price for its muddled decision. Why do you sell arms to Taiwan? We don't sell arms to Hawaii, said Colonel Liu Mingfu, a China National Defense University professor and author of The China Dream, a nationalistic call to succeed the United States as the world's leading power. Now, I'm all for taking on the Chinese. I'm sick of the Chinese. State capitalism, indeed. Communism and slavery by another name, I say. But what is it with Barry Ho wanting to take on the Chinese? It just seems so out of character that Barry Ho would do something that I agree with. Like tell the Chinese what it's all about. Well, I think I figured it out as I delved into this next story out of Israel. Did you see this picture? There was a picture. It was a picture of an Israeli citizen throwing a shoe at an image of President Barry Ho on TV in protest to Barry's pressure to halt the building of Jewish settlements, which, of course, are apartments and houses to you and I. It's only to educated journalists that houses and apartments are called settlements. So on the one hand, you have Barry Ho pressuring the Chinese, tweaking the Chinese, meeting with the Dalai Lama, selling arms to Taiwan. On the other hand, you have Barry Ho pressuring the Jews not to build any more apartment buildings. And I realize that it may be that Barry Ho's prime motivator is the fact that he's an anti-colonialist. You know, despite the fact that he never really knew his dad was an anti-colonialist of sorts who was imprisoned, I believe, by Churchill and all of that. And, Barry is a confused fellow and a confusing fellow. And when he first came into office, I had a hard time figuring him out because he's such an empty suit, such a blank slate. I mean, I knew he was a leftist. I knew he was a socialist and a Marxist. I knew that he was for the legalization of the murder of certain classes of citizens. I knew all that. But I had a hard time figuring out, what's this guy's motivation? And I think his major motivation may, in fact, be that he's an anti-colonialist. And that could be what motivates just about everything he does. And if that's the case, well, I'm a little bit worried, that's all. Obama the anti-colonialist could get us into a lot of trouble. Damn. All right. One more here from the Reuters Wire. A poll of 2,000 British citizens found that those over 50... laughed far less than their younger counterparts and complained far more. Yeah. Listen to this. While infants laughed up to 300 times a day, that figure had fallen to an average of 6 laughs by teenage years and only 2.5 daily chuckles for those over 60 years old. Men were also found to be grumpier than women. So all you women, just get off my back when I'm in a bad mood, okay? Grumpy by nature. That reminds me, I was sitting in my car the other day, waiting to show my condo to a potential renter, and there I saw a little girl and a little boy and a very small dog. And the dog bolted from the two, and he started running toward my car. And I did the calculations in my head, and I thought, when I was a younger man, I would have jumped out of the car and I would have caught that little dog and saved the day for these poor two little kids who were starting to chase the dog. But I did the calculations in my head and I realized that I couldn't drag my fat carcass out of that car fast enough to get that dog. So the dog went on by. But I got out and I started walking with the two little kids and I said, "Let's go find your dog. I'll help you." And as I'm walking, the little girl said to me, she said, "I'm adopted." I said, "That's great." She said, "My mama was a teenager when I was born. She was in and out of jail. She was really bad. She was a mess." And I said, well, at least she had you. That's pretty great, isn't it?" And she gave me this look out of the side of her eyes with a little smirk that said to me, "Is it really? Is it really?" And that really cut me. Because, you know, little kids should laugh 300 times a day. They shouldn't be pondering the value of their own existence. So hang with me, America. We've got a lot of work to do, okay? We've got a lot of work to do to turn the hearts of the parents back to their children and turn the hearts of the children back to their father. I want to thank my friends at Denver Bible Church, KGOV.com, Personhood USA, and of course my other brother Darryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week, Lord willing, and until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.